compelling, inspiring, innovative.
I object, Your Honor. This trial is a travesty. It's a travesty of a mockery, of a sham, of a mockery, of a travesty, of two mockeries, of a sham.
Welcome to the Charleston School of Law Podcast.
Welcome to the Charleston School of Law Podcast. I'm your host, John Strubel. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google, or your favorite podcast player on the web. Also on our site at charlestonlaw.edu/podcast. Streaming episodes and our archives are available there. We are fresh off today's Professionalism Series event presented by the Charleston Law Office of Student and Career Services and the Center for Diversity in the Legal Profession. And today's topic was reaching back as we climb. We had a discussion about diversity and some of the challenges being faced in the legal profession. And I'm honored to have at the table with me today Charleston Law grads Josh Sally, Eris Hanchard Ferguson, Dwan Berkins Rivers, and LaRonda Grant. And before we get started with the conversation, I'd like each of you to go around the room and tell us a little bit about your background and your experience here at the law school.
Eris Hanchard Ferguson, I work now as general counsel for the Housing Authority of the City of Charleston. I've been there 5 years. Coincidentally enough, I did my first externship when I was in law school at the Housing Authority. So it is a full circle moment being back there. When I was at Charleston Law, I did moot court. I was president of Black Law Students Association for a bit. I was a student ambassador, so definitely got great experience.
How did that experience that you had here prepare you for the work you did in law?
One of the things that's always made Charleston Law a remarkable school is the quality of professors. The former dean, Andy Abrams, said to me, you know, the old adage is typically it's not what you know, but who you know. But he said, really, it's not who you know, but who knows you. And, you know, you really got to put yourself out there. And he said, you know, I can say all day long that I know Barack Obama, but if Barack Obama don't know me, what does that mean? And so I think that the best thing that Charleston gave me was great connections and quality relationships with some amazing legal professionals that have been able to assist me.
Josh, you have the firm you're at has the longest name of anybody here at the table. So
sure. Josh Sally here. I'm with Marin Marvel, Bradley Anderson and Tardy. We are a litigation firm specializing in the defense of commercial and general liability, environmental law, toxic tort, and, you know, general casualty cases.
Yeah.
I was Student Bar Association president and president of Environmental Law Society. I was both on the moot court and trial advocacy boards. Really, for me, the greatest aspect of Charleston School of Law was definitely the faculty and staff here, but ultimately the experiences that I was able to take part in by being on the moot court and trial advocacy boards, being able to travel across the country to represent the school, and something that I really cherish as I look back. Urge anyone to take their time to take part in those programs because they really do provide you, I think, the best real-world type of experience you can get before actually practicing law.
Dwan?
Dwan Berkins Rivers. I work as an associate attorney at Strang Immigration in North Charleston. I was president of the Immigration Law Society, and I was extremely excited to have two students come up to me after the professionalism series to say that they reinvigorated the organization.
Nice.
So I was so scared that when I left that it was going to become defunct. But I was part of the part-time program when I was in school, and so I worked full-time. So I unfortunately didn't get to participate in a lot of the on-campus activities because I was just very much non-traditional student. I started Charleston School of Law in my late 30s. Networking. Many of the wonderful people that I have met here in Charleston, many of them have been CS Law graduates. People really look at that and they connect with you, especially if they're practicing here, they're from here, they're built a life here, built their firm here.
Yeah.
We are building our own legion of community here of graduates where we look out for each other, and I really appreciate that.
And it's our 20th anniversary, so, you know, it's starting, the alumni base is starting to grow some, and you're starting to be able to do some better networking and know a lot of people in the community as well.
Yeah, so actually my journey to law school was quite different, but let's start with this. I am the newly minted assistant director of admissions and the co-director for the Center of Diversity in the Legal Profession. Prior to that, I was an associate attorney out in Alabama. I did multiple things, but I kind of ended my term there as a veteran services attorney, and I was the coordinating project attorney at Legal Services Alabama. And so I really, really enjoyed my time there. Just due to home circumstances, I got a little homesick.
Yeah.
So I had to come back home.
I hear you.
Plus, what place is better than Charleston?
Right? I mean, none. So my law school journey was actually a little different. I actually went to 3 different law schools.
Really?
Yeah. Some would say you probably should have just stayed at Charleston when you had the chance, but my first law school was Charlotte School of Law.
Yeah.
And then right after that, I went to Savannah Law School, which was a branch of Atlanta John Marshall.
Okay.
That unfortunately had to close. And so then Dean Bell. I reached out to Dean Bell, told her my situation and the heartstring that she had and the love and support for the students and wanting to see students thrive and what they were called to do. She wouldn't let me quit. She said, well, the fact that you're even calling me lets me know that you're determined. So let me be just as determined to see how we're going to get you in. And she was able to call the ABA and do a lot of gymnastics that I don't know. I'm still trying to learn as a newly minted assistant director, but she was able to get me in with all of my credits. And so I was a student that came in with only a year and a half left, and I had to kind of forge my way. So it was kind of difficult to kind of break into some groups that might have already been minted for since 1L year. You really, truly become a family.
Yeah.
So I say that I have a lot of adopted cousins and family here because they truly adopted me into the circle. But that's one thing, it's the love and the environment at Charleston that is quite different. Since we are so small, you're able to really find a connection, and just echoing what has already been said by, you know, Dewan and Iris, is that it's really that networking piece, you know, getting yourself out there to at least try and get your name out there.
I want to start with Dewan. You went through a real interesting experience when you got into the practice of law that you explained at the event. Tell us that story about your resume.
I was living in Charlotte and I had graduated with my paralegal degree. Looking for a job, I was sending resumes all over the place. I wasn't getting any calls, no emails, not even a thanks but no thanks. I was just getting, I started to question whether the issue was my name. When people see names that they're unfamiliar with or that they even perceive to be the slightest bit ethnic, I feel as though they tend to put those resumes off to the side. I did a little bit of an experiment where I took my first name off my resume. My middle name is Lynette. Miraculously, after a year of trying to find a job, the phone starts ringing. As much as, you know, you can't 100% pinpoint down that that's the reason, it very much felt to me in the time that that was the reason. When you send hundreds and hundreds of resumes all over the place, and then, you know, you take that one name off your resume, and then you start getting call after call after call.
Have you seen an evolution in people being more receptive?
I feel that there's been a lot of evolution, especially in the field that I'm in. There's not a lot of Black people in immigration. When I walk through the courthouse and I'm seeing other attorneys, I'm seeing lots more attorneys of color. When I was job hunting this particular time, I didn't feel like anyone cared about my name. I felt that they were welcoming of the fact that I wanted to learn more about immigration, that I wanted to, you know, fight the good fight. And so as long as I was willing to put in the work, they didn't care about. That was nice to feel that I was walking into a community that was like, we need your help. Come on in.
Yeah. Iris, I want to start this one with you. Define diversity.
It really applies to truly diversity in thought and different experiences in different places in life where you lived. You know, if you've lived in various areas, different parts of the country, or even in other other countries, diversity in age, you know, having someone with more senior experience, but someone that's newer, younger, kind of sees things from a fresher take. Diversity, it can span. And so I think sometimes we get ourselves kind of pigeonholed in this idea that it is just about race, but it is really about bringing different areas of thought to the table to tackle an issue. You know, I said in the professionalism series, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yeah.
I think that we do better for ourselves when we are able to take in a lot of opinions to tackle a problem. You know, it's kind of like those old school ropes courses when you would go out and it'd be a group of you and you got to get everybody from one side to the other side. The goal is not just for one of you to get over, it's for all of you to get over.
Correct.
And so if everybody is involved, if everybody is able to look at the problem and kind of offer a different perspective, you're probably going to get those people to the other side a lot quicker than you would otherwise.
That's so wise. Josh, for you, define diversity.
When I think about diversity, I think about similar to what Eris said, it's more than just identity, but it's also a diversity of thought. We're talking about including both people that are disabled, people that might have income disparity, right? We're talking about potential folks that you can encounter in your walk of life, right? Because ultimately, when you provide that collaboration of collective thought, it ultimately creates a better outcome for your clients. That's kind of what I think about when I think diversity. I don't necessarily think race, although it's important to just remind ourselves that if you're African American in this country, right, you might not necessarily be a descendant from Africa. You might be from the Caribbean, or you might be from other parts of the world. And so that also provides more context for you to be able to clearly see and clearly collaborate with others.
Duan, do you have a perspective that varies off that or is complements that as well?
Yeah, just race is what we automatically think of, but it could be the person who is military and they have a completely different mindset because of their experiences. Somebody like me who's a child of a person in the military, who those experiences could be brought to the table because I've just had to move all over the place.
Sure.
So I think people just need to open their mind to what diversity and equity and inclusion really mean.
Mm. LaRonda, do you have any thought?
I do. I always tell even the students that I'm interviewing for admissions, or even when I was in practice talking to different clients, not seeing the other, but seeing one another. Mm. And I think that that's very important, because sometimes when we look at the term diversity, it's always pinpointing the other of somebody else, you know, what is unique in a way. And not that that's, you know, terrible, but I think that sometimes that lends for a lot of discrimination or a lot of biases. Of course, it's diversity of thought, it's race, it's gender, it's all of these things.
I think it's so important to stop thinking about diversity in corporate think. In a bunch of words that sound nice and pretty. What it might feel like when someone says they're a diverse culture, but then in practice, it doesn't really reflect that.
We use diversity in this term, or you know, a page on a website, and it's kind of just lip service, a little bit of a cultural reference to Legally Blonde, you know, in that movie the whole time. I mean, she and Reese Witherspoon's a white woman, so I mean, in the movie the whole time it was never about race, but it was about how all the other reasons she didn't belong. You know, too colorful, she, you know, too blonde, too bubbly of a personality, because apparently otherwise a lawyer was supposed to look this one particular way.
Josh, a statement you made in your bio that you take your learned life experience and apply it to the client's legal issues.
Absolutely. It almost seems like there's a rush to check off a box and say, hey, we've got a black employee, or we've got a female employee, or what have you, but there's never an investment into their diversity. And so what I mean by that is, you know, you're now the new black lawyer of the firm, but this is our culture and we need you to fit within this box, you know? And so a lot of times what we see in the practice of law is so many people losing who they are to fit in a mold that they're told is how they should present, whether it's by clients, whether it's by the managing partners at their firm. And so ultimately for me in my practice, I look at how I can involve more of who I am as a person to help solve some of the legal issues that my clients are facing. It's not relatable. And then also in the bigger picture, right, is one of the reasons why there's a lack of diversity in many professional fields is because there aren't enough people to show as a model, right? When I was growing up, I didn't see many black lawyers, and the ones that I did were on TV representing criminals, right? I didn't know that you could, you know, represent Fortune 500 companies. Right. I didn't know that you could be involved in healthcare law. Like, these are things that weren't talked about. So there was always this Dave Chappelle skit about, and also Key and Peele, they talk about how, like, black professionals, they always present a certain way. They're always conservatives, and they always carry themselves such that, you know, they make the joke that they're not really black people, right? They act very off-white, you know? And so with that, that's very discouraging, because you then tell a group of people that, like, hey, if you want to be successful, then you have to leave who you are behind. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. What is it like to be, you know, diverse in the legal field? I'll give you an example. There was a day, you know, a group of us went to court. You know, I was the only black lawyer there. The bailiffs, the judge's assistants, you know, the clerks, they all thought that I was the client. You know, and I was the one that was presenting the argument that day in court. You know, my boss at the time, had, you know, he kind of made the joke. I knew at that point in time it kind of came full circle for him for what it was like to look like me in the practice of law in South Carolina.
It reminds me of a capstone paper that I wrote for, you know, my undergrad, and it was Assimilation is Assassination. And my point was is that minority students were forced to assimilate to a culture or to an ideal, and they lost themselves in that way. But then they also could not perform to their best potential because this is not me. I wrote that paper. I did all of the research on it, and then I became that same statistic. I practiced in Alabama. I loved the state of Alabama until I got to certain areas, and where in the courtrooms you were seen as other. My other was like a jacket. It was very glaring. It was something that they saw, and I honestly felt like a diversity hire. I felt like I was the only African American, period, and then I was female on top of that. And I know through the podcast they can't see me, but then I have locks. I am eccentric. I love color. I'm very Afro. And I love that, but I felt that I cannot be myself. I was also told, maybe let's not wear pink to the courtroom, or maybe let's not wear that. I felt stifled, and I felt, and I had to assimilate into a culture that was not me until, I'm not ashamed to name drop, she was very pivotal in my practice as a freshly baby attorney, Judge Kimberly Clark. After a hearing, I was practicing family law. I was able to keep the children with their father, which is something that's kind of different. And she told me, hey, come to the back. And I was scared. She said, don't you ever try to act like somebody else. She said, because who you are, what you said, the amount of things that you brought to the table today, you actually illuminated my eyes to see something different about these children that I never would have thought. For corporate speaking, you really have to be careful of just trying to fill a quota.
You know, at the basis of it, one of the things that I think is always difficult for me to kind of wrap my head around when diversity ends up being a struggle for places is money is money. And if you're a firm that wants to operate, you need to make money. It seems like business suicide to restrict where that money comes from. Mm-hmm. And people want relatability. And I don't know about other people, but if I'm running a firm, I want to make money, and I want to make it from whomever and however many clients. So if I got to have an army of people that all look, feel, and do different, then I can have an army of clients that all appreciate the fact that their attorney has that relatability.
All four of you have gone
through experiences that have shaped who you are.
If I can speak on that, you know, there was, you know, most of y'all can't see me, but I have long locks all the way down to my back. At one point in my career, we had a big case that was getting ready for trial, and there was, you know, a conversation about putting the trial team together and, you know, whether it would have been appropriate for me to be on the trial team based upon how I look and whether that would have been received well, given the nature of our case and the types of juries that we were going to be in front of in South Carolina. You know, that significantly crippled me for, you know, 2-3 years. From that moment forward, everything that I did, I said to myself, you know, are they looking at me differently? You know, are my arguments being received, you know, poorly because of my hair? And is this something that I'm going to have to change about myself? And, you know, I always attribute my hair to my success in that, you know, 11 years ago when I decided to grow my hair, it was a turning point in my life and my confidence. And so, you know, it was a big deal for me. You know, fast forward to the present day, I obviously still have my hair, and I've gone past that, that pressure or that anxiety that I was experiencing, mainly through dealing with folks and getting that positive affirmation from them. You know, many of my clients continuously write me, even though I've not worked on their case for 2-3 years, just as a reminder to say, hey,
thank you.
You know, thank you. And not just thank you because you helped me with my case, but thank you because I didn't know that someone could look, dress, act however like you and be successful and be in a position to help others. And so for me, ultimately, I stress the importance of individuality. And more importantly, you know, we have a legal duty to our clients and ethical, you know, duty to our clients to be the best versions of ourselves, both from a mental health standpoint, but also from a competence standpoint. That's what I think diversity really is. It's understanding that we all have these insecurities, these things that make us different, but that it's those insecurities that, you know, make the puzzle work.
You know, people see you and then they make an impression or a judgment. I want to hear you before I make an impression or a judgment. I want to know he's got the skills coming into the room.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I do want to make this point because it would be ignorant for me to ignore this reality, right? There have been times where I've communicated with clients solely on the phone, and, you know, it's the first time we're actually going to meet, and we show up to court, and I'm sitting there at the plaintiff's side counter, you know, plaintiff's side table, waiting. You know, my client walks in, and I know what they look like because I've seen their photographs or gone through their records, sure. But they may not necessarily know what I look like, and so they're standing around waiting, and I'm like, you know, Mr. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so, and they're like, your voice sounds familiar. I'm like, it's Mr. Sally, we've been talking for the last couple months, you know, and they're taken back a little bit, but honestly, but I will tell you, you know, and I've had clients tell me, you know, their image of what a lawyer looks like is, you know, military cut, you know, and so that is something that I think we talk about a lot, is incorporating all walks of life into opportunities which they were no longer, which were offered because they were excluded, right? Why do we view certain professions or certain rooms to be only accessible to certain walks of life?
Learned behavior.
Know? And it is a learned behavior, you know?
I did want to add, I think it's so important for us to continue to sit at the tables and be in the courtrooms because we are breaking that stereotype and perception for people who haven't encountered us.
Right.
I've lost count of the number of times that I've been specifically in the Charleston courthouse, and I'm stopped and asked if I'm the
defendant.
No, not the defendant. I've been asked for something. I don't know what it is about my face, but people seem to think I'm a probation officer.
Oh, my.
And so I'm like,
do probation officers come to court all that often? Like, of all the roles, I would think court reporter first. So, like,
really specific.
That must be a probation officer. Like, what?
I'm like, no. I mean, I remember one time I literally stopped in front of the lady, looked myself up and down, and was like,
what's the tell?
What about me? Yeah, it makes you think that. But just like LaRonda's experience with the judge who was like, make sure that you are authentically yourself, the clients that we encountered had no clue that there were attorneys out there that looked like us. So often they feel lost and unsure of where to go because they may be looking for somebody with a certain life experience and they're not seeing that.
Take away the stigma behind diversity, equity, and inclusion and start talking about, well, what does it provide for us? What are the outcomes of it, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think to the, you know, point Josh was making about pulling away just the idea and thinking about what are we actually trying to accomplish, I think the answer to that is it increased knowledge and capability.
You're wanting to relate. If I have never had an experience with something and I'm coming to explain something to you, you have no idea what I'm talking about, and I don't have any idea what I'm talking about. Especially when it comes to DEI, even though I know we're using it now as an acronym, using the term DEI has such a stigma, but it's like, no, if you actually spell out what the words mean, it's diversity, equity, and inclusion. If you can look that in the face and say, I do not want my firm to be diverse, I don't want my firm to have equity, and I don't want my firm or my place of employment to have inclusion. If you can say that that's not what you want, I think there's a difficult road that you have ahead of you.
Earlier when we were at the professionalism series, Josh said something about, you know, women in the practice and knowing that they, you know, have a hard time. And he was talking about, you know, looking at firms and even what you're saying, all right, take it from being just a acronym DEI to saying, I don't want diversity, I don't want equity, I don't want inclusion. So if we take it out of just being a label DEI, or we put a face to it and we look at the people that can be affected, that's women of any color, it's, you know, different ethnicities, disability, right. Socioeconomic status, where you're from. If you, all of those things are what is included in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the people that fit that build and you see them, you probably would not be able to look at any of those people and say, I don't think you can do the job. Mm-hmm. So take this name away from it and start thinking about the actual people that are affected by it and wonder whether they can do it or not. And 9 times out of 10, the answer is always going to be yes.
I want everybody to leave with just word of encouragement to a prospective student who may hear this and think about, where do I find my place in law school? How do I go about doing that? What recommendation do you give me as I'm preparing for law school, whether it's here at Charleston School of Law or someplace else?
The law is changing every day because the world is changing every day.
Sure.
There is a place for everyone because with so much change and recognizing that sometimes the law can't always keep up, we need different perspectives to be in the practice. We need different schools of thought, different backgrounds. So if you're out there listening and you're wondering how will you find a place, if there is not already one, you will make one and it will be a place that is probably needed. Mm-hmm. So don't let any, you know, fears or doubts hold you back. Because there is definitely, someone said this during the professionalism series, there is a client out there who is looking particularly for your unique skill set, what you bring to the table, and what you have to offer. So don't be afraid to start.
Boy, when that moment happens, though, it's got to be like a goosebumps moment. Like,
oh, very much so.
I've found my place. I've found my purpose. Josh, you want?
Yeah, if I could just share one thing, I'll just share what my wife always tells me, who I also met in law school, which is really a good point to make.
That's not a service here at this
one. Just a coincidence. No, but that's a testament to the great community here. You know, but you know, she always tells me that when we all get up in the morning, we each put our pants on one leg at a time. We're all equal. We're all the same. And so as you go through this process, law school is going to be daunting, but you have what it takes just to continue to believe in yourself and trust others around you, and all things will work out. It may not seem like it's going to happen at the pace that you want it to happen, but ultimately you'll learn through your experiences, and you'll take those and help others. And that's ultimately the goal, right, is to help and be of service to others, pro bono populi, embrace it, and you'll do great.
Awesome. Dewan?
They are in need of something that only you can provide. This is where you are meant to be. Mm-hmm. You're here for a reason. Plant your feet. Do all the things, whether the things are moot court, whether the things are joining the student-led organizations, whether it's working in the library so you can meet a little bit of everyone, whatever the thing is, do all the things that you can do to meet people, because when you leave here, you are walking into a tremendous family.
Well, I think it's also important to mention that you came back after you already had a career. Yes. And it's never too late. If that's your fear, it's like, well, I can't do it. You did it.
Yeah.
You're an example of that.
Exactly.
So.
This is a whole second career for me. So don't feel as though because it's not the traditional path that it's not still your path.
Yeah.
Good point.
Loranda?
Just the words that I kind of said at the start of the professionalism series, which is Sankofa, which is a Kan word coming, deriving from the Ghana tribe.
What's that word again?
Sankofa.
Okay.
Which basically means to go back and get, or in other words, meaning to learn from the past and inform the future. And I would say to the students, not only, you know, learn from the past mistakes or the past experiences that you have, inform your future, know where you're going, be bright, have your aspirations on the tip of your tongue, but then also push those that are before you forward as well. And then don't be afraid to reach back and help somebody else when you get there.
Thank you all for taking the time today. That's a lot of time. It's probably, if you were billing me hourly.
Couldn't afford me.
Streaming on Spotify, iTunes, and charlestonlaw.edu.
This is the Charleston School of Law podcast.